On the one hand, growth, as you might imagine, was extremely unbalanced. Heavy industry tended to develop at the expense of consumer goods. Partly this is because this is where investment really ultimately was given priority in building up heavy industry, machine tool plants and the like, but also because in 1930, all private manufacturing and all private trade were abandoned, were made illegal. And this, of course, was an area in small trade and small manufacturing that the state had no interest in filling. So large numbers of consumer products ceased to exist, a very unbalanced economic process. In fact, even heavy industry, which was the center of attention, suffered from imbalanced growth. Among major problems that one sees are shortages of raw materials, including fuel and supplies. A desire to produce a certain number of machines was decided, but they never were sure where to find the raw materials for it. There was also the problem of overproduction. Many factories would produce things, pieces of machinery, for example, that no other factory was prepared to make use of. So large amounts of manufactured goods, parts meant to go into other manufactured goods, mainly machinery, tended to be left outside of factories simply to rust. Quality also suffered in this sort of industrialization development movement, since the emphasis was always on quantity much more than on quality. There also, one should add, in terms of a type of imbalance in this process, given that this is a socialist movement, were very, very bad working and living conditions for workers in these big new factories and indeed even in the old industry. At the same time, it's fair to say that the achievements of the first five-year plan were quite considerable. Production did increase considerably, though obviously nowhere near the impossible targets that had been set, though we don't actually know how much production increased since all official statistics were so unreliable, the facts are hard to see. But it's clear that production increased at a much more rapid rate and certainly overcoming the slow rates of the 1920s. Whole new industrial areas were in fact constructed as a result of these big industrial construction projects. In the Urals, for example, Magnitogorsk, which I mentioned, a big hydroelectric plant in the Ukraine, Siberia was developed, all of which played an important part in future economic development. And most important, it's argued by economic historians, a foundation was laid by this rapid push, a foundation for future sustained growth that would take place during the following five-year plans, none of which had this sort of extremism of the first plan. Now, all of these changes in industry brought about by the first five-year plan, by Stalin's revolution from above, were considerable. But there were in some ways even more dramatic changes in agriculture. Like industrialization, agrarian development was also treated as a political, one might say, as a military campaign. Or in the language of the times, this was class war against exploiters, against people known as kulaks, richer peasants. And on the side of the state in this class war against the richer peasants were said to be the poor peasants who were allied with the proletariat, which meant the state and the party. Partly this was accurate, though in reality this was more a class war of the proletarian state, as it saw itself, against the entire peasantry as a class. This was a gradual intensifying attack against peasants in the years from about 1927, when it first started, through 1930, when it reached its pinnacle. Began in the winter of 1927-28 with the resumption of forced grain requisitioning. The problem of grain not being delivered in sufficient quantity became so severe that the state, this time pushed by Stalin against the protests already of Bukharin, though he was still in power, sent armed battalions, mainly of workers and communists in the countryside, to insist, as during the Civil War, that they hand grain over at prices, low prices, set by the state. And this was repeated again, actually, in the fall of 1928 and again in 1929. The immediate results of these campaigns of resumed forced grain requisitioning, the immediate results, were in a certain sense good. A large amount of additional grain turned out to be in the hands of peasants and was collected. But the long-term effects, as during forced grain requisitioning during the Civil War, were less promising.